Frothy waves crested over the sandy beach, and the forces of Royal Island sloshed onto a bizarre shoreline. Constantly looking around in unfettered fear, the barons and their sekmen pulled the longboats onto the shore until the crafts were completely out of the water. Less than 100 paces away, the Warhammer lay tilted on her side, without a sign of life on board. But then the Outlanders would have to be pretty stupid to stay on the craft once they reached land.
Trapped?
Trapped.
Yeah, it makes sense. After all, it would be exactly what we would have done. All right, nobody go near the Warhammer! Unless you want to see your innards on the outside!
Bending hesitantly, Set Chief Donovan took a handful of the weird material covering the beach, curiously running the strange dirt through his fingers.
This be some sort of rock. No, it's crystal.
Sand.
Sandy beaches. Could those be palm trees and coconut trees?
Guess so.
Pulling out half of a broken binocular, Donovan swept the area for any dangers and found none in sight. Then he settled the optical device on the ruins to their south. There didn't seem to be any outer defensive wall around the build, which was beyond strange. However, all of the buildings seemed to be made of brick or concrete. All of them. There wasn't a sign of any logs, wood shingles, or even a thatched roof in the whole damn place. Even more outrageous, lying smack in the middle of the bill, was a bridge apparently going nowhere. It was a perfectly ordinary bridge of the type they used in North Point to cross rough ravines or deep water. But this one was obviously made entirely of metal, not pine boards bound with rope and reinforced with glue boiled from old bones, but actually forged from metal and bound with metal. The entire place seemed to be made of metal in a thousand different shapes, sizes, and types. Sheets, rods, beams. It dwarfed the treasure trove of Green Mountain into insignificance. Whatever else this voyage might accomplish, their shortage of steel was over with, now and forever.
Are they building a vill or taking one down?
Don't know, don't care.
Griffin spotted the line of footprints leading from the Warhammer. Then he saw that the marks ended at what had to be the blast zone of a Gren. The churned sand dotted with the corpses of men and horses. A thick cloud of flies buzzed over the still forms. Had the Outlanders already been killed by some local baron?
Double time! The bastards went this way!
Looks like we've got plenty of meat right here already chilled.
Haven't had me some horse since the last solstice.
Watch for traps!
Carefully investigating the bodies, the Sekmen did not find any booby traps. Only an unlimited amount of metal knives and belt buckles and even buttons. They also did not find any of the Outlanders strewn among the carnage, which was more good news, as it meant that the bastards were still alive. From the pattern of the blood spatter, most of the killing seemed to have been done after the explosion, with blades, which might mean that the Outlanders were low on brass. That would have been even better news, except that the horseback riders had been heavily armed with blasters, metal blasters. Every damn one of them. The weapons were still here. Only the brass was gone.
The cowards chilled some friendly locals just to get their brass.
Which makes the local baron an ally.
Wainwright thoughtfully studied the tracks of the animals. They led straight back to the half-built vill down the coast.
All right. I want a full combat formation, just as if we were going after some hillies.
You there, take the lead position! You five, cover the rear!
Just keep your hands off your damn blasters! We're going to talk to the Baron of the Vill, not invade!
But Baron, the Outlanders plainly went into the trees!
And with their lead, we'll never catch up again on foot. But with horses, we can ride them down in a day. Easy as chilling a newborn!
There was some shoving and scuffling as the Sekmen from the two Vills awkwardly formed marching columns, but finally, Sek Chief Donovan and the corporals got them into a rough formation.
Forward!
Shuffling out of the nearby trees came a man wearing only ragged clothing, most of it hanging loosely in dirty strips. His skin was a ghastly pallor and covered with circular spots or marks that kind of looked like those suckers on the tentacles of a kraken. As the stranger staggered for the pile of corpses, more of the diseased people appeared from the forest, only to stop and stare at the orderly ranks of armed Sekmen with blank expressions.
Are those muties? Don't be ridiculous. No Norm ever mutated that badly. Those are probably just tattoos.
Oh, sure look real to me.
Greetings! We mean you no harm. You savvy talk-talk?
As if in reply, the mob of stickies charged forward, waving their boneless arms. Moving low and fast through the bushes covering a long hill, the companions paused to look down upon the remains of the city below. Loose leaves were sticking out of their clothing as crude camo, and each had dirt streaked across his or her face. The light-haired people in the group, Doc, Liana, and Jack, also had dark cloths wrapped around their heads. This close, they could see there were sections of the ruins that were still in livable condition, but not many. Entire neighborhoods were only piles of loose rubble studded with assorted plant life. Most of the streets were only a wild mosaic of cracked asphalt, and bushes grew on slanted rooftops. Whatever disaster had struck Kalkaska Down had nearly removed it from existence. However, a couple of office buildings survived relatively intact. Reaching only 10 stories, the structures stood like giants among the field of desolation. Their decorative outer marble cracked to show the solid concrete underneath, and the plastic windows were still intact, although all of the lower ones were boarded over.
What in the name of the elders are these?
Ruins. Nothing special.
But they're gigantic. Hot rain, they reach to the clouds.
Near enough.
Still, all this metal.
There it is.
City Hall?
The Ville for the Cannies.
The home of the Cannies was one of the office buildings, the block surrounded by a high wall of sidewalk slabs, topped with what looked like barbed wire. There was no sign of the horses, so the locals had to corral the animals inside the building for safekeeping. The roof was covered with plastic sheeting, probably to protect the building from the acid rains and to collect the polluted water to extract the sulfur for making it a black powder. Smoke rose from the ventilation shafts set among the sheets, and the wind carried the faint smell of roasting meat.
Chicken. That's just chicken, not people.
Really?
Really.
Turning his head, J.B. arched a questioning eyebrow, and Mildred shrugged in reply. Ignorance was bliss. Locating the gate in the wall, Ryan saw that it was an impressive hodgepodge of sheet metal in every color and size imaginable, all welded together into a rather formidable piece of armor. Studded with spikes on the outside, the gate hung from a massive pair of hinges and was reinforced on the inside with railroad ties used as locking bolts.
Nobody's getting through that baby without a lot of explosives. Sure hope that's not City Hall.
Quite so, John Barrymore.
No prob. There it is.
It took Ryan a moment to spot what the teen had discovered. Then he saw the fallen marble columns and traced them back to a smashed building that once had possessed a domed roof.
Thank goodness the U.S. government loved Roman architecture.
Not going to be easy getting there in broad daylight. That office building has a direct view of City Hall.
Even then, we don't even exactly know where the dam entrance to the redoubt is hidden. If it's located under those heavy columns, or worse, the dome, we'll need dozens of pipe bombs to blow our way inside.
No need for that. We'll use the sewer.
In the middle of the fallen metropolis, smoke was expanding from the only remaining bridge, the flaming pieces tumbling down into a whitewater river rushing to the lake. On the far side stood a large group of stickies, angrily waving their arms. Across the river stood the triumphant barons and a good 30 Sekmen. The small army turned to head deeper into the sprawling ruins.
They'll head straight for the Cannies. When they meet, nobody gonna notice us slipping into the redoubt.
Into the sewer. All right, follow me.
Easing out of the bushes, Ryan started down the sloping side of the grassy hill, with the others close behind. Moving swiftly down the side of the hill, the companions kept low as they skirted along the ruins. The pavement was long gone, scavenged by the Cannies, so the companions kept to the streets. Potholes were everywhere, some of them deep enough to have small trees growing inside, and one held the fiberglass chassis of a car. Insects had consumed the rubber tires, but the rest of the vehicle seemed to be in fine shape, with a grinning skeleton behind the steering wheel wearing the tattered remains of a three-piece suit, a PDA poking from the breast pocket of his suit coat. The weed-filled outlines of where houses had once stood lined the broken streets, along with some charred holes that were always situated on a corner.
Gas station.
As the companions got closer to the city center, the destruction steadily lessened, and soon pieces of walls were standing around them, then a few telephone poles, and finally the huge mounds of broken masonry, pipes, cables, cars, mailboxes, billboards, and skeletons. Mostly those of people and what looked like dogs, but the piles were uncountable, and the companions hurried past the unnerving remains of the former inhabitants. Moving through a strip mall now covered with a thick growth of ivy and numerous apple trees, the companions paused as they heard something in the distance.
Sounds like they found each other.
Indeed, my young friend. And may the sole winner of their conflict be the Emperor Worm.
Studying the ground, Ryan began kicking at clumps of weeds until he was rewarded by the sound he was looking for. Drawing his panga, he slashed away the plants to reveal a circular manhole cover. Working together, it took three of them to move the heavy iron disc, but underneath was a dark tunnel. As always, Ryan took the lead, carefully climbing down the rusty ladder with gun in hand. As he reached the bottom, his Sig Sauer swept for any targets. But there was nothing in sight, aside from a dark, brick-lined tunnel heading in opposite directions. The ceiling was slightly cracked, most likely from the new quakes that had reformed the upper peninsula of Michigan, and countless pale roots dangled from the curved ceiling like jungle vines. Ryan stood guard while the others joined him in the sewer. As Mildred pumped her old flashlight into operation, everybody else lit candles, and the companions started off in the rough tunnel, heading toward City Hall. Reaching an intersection of tunnels, JB checked his compass, and they went in a new direction. Twice more, they changed tunnels.
Wait!
There was a side tunnel branching off the main passageway, but unlike all of the others, this one was sealed off with a steel gate and large padlock. Going to the lock, JB pulled out his probes and worked diligently for several minutes before he was rewarded with the lock opening and the gate swinging away. Moving to take the lead in the side tunnel, Christy noted that there were no stains in the concrete between the bricks from this ever being used. Better and better. So this was either a brand new tunnel when Skydark hit, or it was a fake. Reaching the end of the tunnel, Christy smiled at the sight of a blank wall, the plaster smooth and undamaged. Plaster in a sewage tunnel? Kicking the wall with a boot, she made several large pieces of plaster crack off to expose wooden planks underneath. Now the rest of the companions joined her, ripping off the plaster with their bare hands, then hacking into the planks with their knives. Weakened with age, the board soon splintered apart, and out poured a small avalanche of clean white pebbles. When they shoved those aside, at last was revealed a seamless steel door. There was no keypad, lock, or even a handle. JB got to work again.
Escape tunnel. In case trapped in a bomb shelter, the bands could still get out this way.
So we're going in backward?
The back door has never guarded as well as the front.
The steel door swung aside to show a toilet seat and a small stall. Ryan actually gave a half smile at that.
Smart.
The pencil pushers had hidden the escape route inside the lav. Holstering the Sig Sauer, Ryan dripped some wax on the end of the barrel of the Steyr, stuck in a lit candle, then extended it forward as far as he could reach. He could see the place was a single huge room with rows of cots, workbenches, and shelves stacked with cartons marked with the symbol of the U.S. government.
Jackpot.
Spreading out, the companion set down a ring of candles to brighten the darkness. Heading for the workbench, JB fumbled with some wires for a moment. The overhead lights flickered into life, then brightened to full strength. Two of them immediately blew, but the rest stayed shining brightly.
Nuke batteries?
Not quite. Car batteries.
The armorer waved at the row of batteries and waiting bottles of acid.
Just pour some acid into the batteries, and after a few ticks, the lead plates start making current.
Old tech.
From before Skydark. Don't add the acid, and the batteries last forever.
How long will they last now?
Can't say for sure. A couple of weeks, maybe more.
Briefly checking the medical cabinet, Mildred was unhappily surprised at the poor condition of the supplies within. Mice had gotten inside and nibbled almost everything, puncturing the protective envelopes, and then abandoning the pungent chems. They broke the seals, then left, allowing the medicine to slowly dry into the consistency of a brick. There were some hypodermic needles still in good shape, but that was all. Still, better than nothing. Going to a cardboard box on a shelf, Christy quickly checked the expiration date listed on the canned goods.
Oh, for the love of Gaia, this is from 1950. And we're not going to find anything usable among this junk.
But hold, what have we here?
Doc had opened a metal cabinet. Stacked neatly inside was a small arsenal of revolvers and shotguns. Eagerly opening a box of .45 caliber rounds, Doc extracted a cartridge and used his knife to separate the lead from the brass. Pouring out the contents, his hope sank at the sight of the dull gray gunpowder. Applying the flame of his butane lighter to the stuff, it burned feebly a little, but that was all.
Dead as Descartes. This ammunition must be from excess stores they had left over. The brass is loaded with actual gunpowder, not cordite or that silvery stuff modern weapons use.
Nitrocellulose. Too bad. If the fools had used cordite, we might have found something still in working condition.
Forget it. We're just here for the exit.
Ryan walked toward the front of the bomb shelter. There was a slab of lead standing kitty-corner in the room, and sure enough, there was a large door set into the wall behind, truncating the corner. The inside of that was also thickly lined with lead. Opening the door, Ryan found the way blocked by a large pile of skeletons, most of them with broken bones or bullet holes in their heads. On the floor was a dusty collection of knives and guns. The damn fools had fought one another to get inside, so nobody had. Pushing aside the dead, the companions moved into the basement of City Hall. Rubble was everywhere, along with dozens more skeletons.
Look at all these blasters and ammunition. You better be right about this, Doc.
Right about what, dear lady? Have I been here before?
She meant about the brass, Doc.
As the worried face of the time traveler eased, Liana looked hard at Christy, and the redhead shrugged in response. Sooner or later, Liana would have to learn about the lapses in Doc's scrambled memory. Searching for the least damaged section of the building, they soon located a corridor ending in the furnace room. Some of the bricks in the wall of the corridor had come loose over the decades and fallen away to reveal the armor-glass slabs reinforcing the walls. The sight renewed their hope. The Matrans units of the redoubts were made of armor-glass. Inside the furnace room, they separated for a rec and easily located a small keypad set into a concrete wall. Almost holding his breath, Ryan tapped the entry code for a redoubt into the alphanumeric pad. There was only a brief pause before a section of the concrete wall broke away from the rest and slid aside to reveal a long ferro-concrete corridor extending far out of sight. Sluggishly at first, panels set along the ceiling flickered into life, illuminating the corridor for 100 yards. But then, just as quickly, they died away, leaving it in total darkness.
Never saw that happen before.
Yeah, I know.
With no other choice in the matter, the companions entered the corridor and grimly started forward with a growing sense of unease. Once, the theater on the fifth floor of the office building had shown movies, or people had performed live plays, but now the electrical equipment had been removed, the wires used to rig snares, the heavier cables made into crossbow strings. A dozen lanterns shone bright with fish oil, extracted from the denizens of the nearby lake, and two large torches crackled on either side of the skull throne. Piled on the stage were guns, knives, spears, machetes, and even a couple of swords, recovered from pre-dark museums. On the throne sat an angry woman, her face streaked with blood, her clothing ripped and torn until her leather bodice was all that kept her from being completely naked. But her blistered face shone with victorious contempt, and a loaded military rifle lay across her lap. Two men shared the stage with the woman.
Kneel! Kneel before your baron!
Openly bleeding, the last of the cannies kowtowed before the woman, splaying their hands on the carpeting to show their complete and utter subservience. The plump outlander had won the battle against the Stickies, and had then taken on the cannies. Now they were her property, to do with as she pleased. That was the ancient law. Proudly holding their weapons, the 20 surviving Sekmen from Royal Island walked around the cowering mainlanders. Killing the cannies had been easy, and now their massive collection of guns belonged to the barons. Wheel guns, scatter guns, and more different types of rapid fires than anybody had ever dreamed. Some of the Sekmen had already taken to calling the Mainlanderville by the new name of Blaster Haven.
At least they know how to bow, if not fight.
Good thing, as I do not plan on leaving. These glebes have the wealth of the pre-dark world just lying around them, and they choose to live in one cabin. 10 stories tall is nice, damn impressive. But this could be the vill of all vills.
Agreed. But first, we have some more chilling to do.
Not me. I'm done with that. They took my vill, but now I have a better one. Forget the one-eyed fool and rule with me, cousin. Side by side, in everything. We can be lovers here, Nolan. That is allowed here, as there is no book of blood. I asked, and they've never even heard of such a thing. Which means all the sex partners and children that we want. 2, 3, 10, there is no limit.
Keep it. You can have the vill. It's yours, all of it. I will lay no claim, aside for asking a single price.
Name it.
Half of the Sekmen, horses, and blasters and brass.
Hot rain, are you still... Most of the horses were chilled in the battle. You can have half of those that survived, and enough Sekhmen to ride them. You'll need speed, dear cousin, if you're to catch up with Finnegan.
Exactly how many horses are we talking?
10.
The best 5 horses, saddlebags of smoked fish, no meat, blasters, grens, brass, and the best 3 island Sekhmen. Plus the best local tracker.
Everybody but me.
During the takeover of the Vill, the Sek chief had killed a Canny about to gut Baron Wainwright. Afterward, she had informed him what the reward would be, in detail. Blasters, brass, and her bed forever. What man could want more?
Accepted.
Done and done.
The small supply of candles burned out after a few hours, and the companions had to continue through the darkness using only Mildred's old flashlight. The pale yellow beam did little to brighten the gloom inside the corridor, but it was just enough for them to dimly see a few feet ahead. There were no branching corridors, gates, twists, or even turns. The passageway ran straight and true, like the barrel of a gun. Mildred, in the lead, said nothing, carefully watching the floor ahead of them for any sudden drops as she kept gently pumping the handle on the survivalist flashlight, trying to get as much illumination as she could from the ancient device without risking an overload.
At least we'll know which direction to go if the flashlight dies.
Like shit to a goose.
Well, thank you for that lovely image.
Forcing herself not to hurry, Mildred maintained an even pace as the ghostly pearlescence steadily increased until they could plainly see the interior of the corridor and the flashlight was no longer needed.
Oh, shit.
Mildred released the pump to click off the device. Less than 100 paces ahead of the companions, the corridor abruptly ended in a wooden glen, slanting beams of morning sunlight coming through the leafy trees to dapple the smooth armaglass floor.
Fire blast. I was afraid of something like this.
Must have been a nuke storm. Probably the same bomb that rearranged some of Michigan.
Well, there are no rads.
Been going straight for almost a day. Might as well keep going.
How long do you think it is to the next redoubt?
Only one way to find out.
It was noon when they found the rest of the corridor. Smashed and broken into countless pieces, tiny shards of armorglass lay scattered across a wide grassland, the material reflecting the bright sunlight like partially buried diamonds. A low hill rose just ahead of the companions, the sloping sides covered with thick tufts of green grass, and set flat into the truncated curve was a large black door.
By the lost gods, is that the door?
Oh, this is nothing. Wait until you see inside.
Hot showers.
Advancing warily to the blast doors, Ryan and Christy checked the ground for any sign that the Cannies or anybody had ever tried to get inside. But the area appeared clean, and Ryan turned his attention to the small keypad set into the black metal frame on the Titanic entrance. He tapped in the entry code, and the black door moved aside. Liana could say nothing as the pristine armorglass corridor became revealed on the other side, rows of electric light shining brightly from the clean ceiling.
Come on, my dear. This way to a new world.
Biting her lip, she hesitated only a second, then joined the others as they walked over the threshold and out of the natural world. Feeling the sterilized air from the vents wash over their faces, the companions smiled in relief and did not react as the blast doors closed behind them.
No! Sorry.
Don't worry about it. Gaia knows I did more than jump the first time I heard the blast doors seal.
Following the zigzag path of the anti-radiation tunnel, the companions entered the huge garage of the redoubt. While the others strolled around, checking for evidence of previous visitors, Liana could only marvel at the spotlessly clean floor, the neatly painted line showing where Wags should be parked, long workbenches lining the walls covered with tools. There was even a thing in the corner that Theo had called a gas pump. It was exactly as he had described it to her on the long boat trip. At the time, Liana had merely assumed he was joking to pass the time, but now saw that the man had told the absolute truth. Could it all be true? Matrans units? Comps? Droids? A moment of irrational fear swept through Liana, then she banished it with sheer force of will. Tech was tech. How did a door differ from a gun or a self-heat? Besides, she trusted Theo completely, and she would follow where he walked. End of discussion.
All right. You two stay here and watch the entrance, while we do a fast wreck of the place.
Do you think anybody could get through that huge door?
The wise never plan for what an enemy might do, but for what they themselves might do.
Check.
Unfortunately, the rest of the companions returned in less than an hour with glum faces.
Clean. Not a can of beans or a pack of salt in the galley.
And the armory is emptier than a sticky's pockets.
Just another dead redoubt. Hell, we found more supplies at that bomb shelter.
Well, at least the showers must work. We'll get clean and grab some sack time before making a jump. Yeah, maybe we'll do better at the next redoubt.
Can't do much worse.
Summoning the elevator, the tired companions shuffled inside and descended to the barracks of the redoubt. Hidden behind rocks and fallen logs, Baron Griffin and his sec men waited for the Outlanders to appear from behind the big black doors. Incredibly, Wainwright had dealt fair, and the canny tracker was exceptionally gifted. He easily found the path of the Outlanders in the forest and followed them through the ruins and into the sewers, through a bomb shelter filled with wonders, only to lose Finnegan once more at a locked metal door situated in a basement. With no other choice, the Baron and his men had circled around to the outside and searched through the night, never stopping for sleep. When checking through binoculars, Griffin had almost choked at the sight of Finnegan and his Coldhearts crossing a field in the next valley. He watched them closely to mark their trail, only to see them open a huge metal door after touching some buttons in a little box. Griffin had no idea what the thing was, but marked down the pattern of the buttons and the order in which they were touched. The Baron had some vague knowledge of reading and knew that the squiggles were numbers and letters, but which was which he had no idea and couldn't care less. Rushing to the hill with his men, Griffin had then studied the little box, and when all was ready, he tapped in the sequence. Sure enough, a massive slab of metal rumbled aside, but that was it. Nothing else happened. When he tapped in the numbers again, the door closed.
You sure they went in there, Baron?
Yes. I saw them enter only an hour ago.
What is this? Some kind of bomb shelter?
Shut up, Phoebe.
Should we go in after them?
No. Not just yet. Let them sweat for a bit. Make them realize they're trapped like rats in a shitter and starting to fight each other. Then we go in with our blasters blazing.
What if there's another way out?
With that door? Without the secret of the buttons, there's not enough black powder in the world to blow a breach in that fragging thing. No, they're in there, trapped in an iron box.
Eventually, all the companions had finished taking showers, reclaimed their guns, and donned fresh clothing from their backpacks. While getting dressed, Mildred and Christy had both given Liana a few personal items, along with a new shirt.
This is wonderful! I've never felt animal skin like this before in my life. Sorry, my stomach's rumbling.
Alas, I feel the same, my dear. My dear Ryan, water has eased our pangs, but might we consider jumping immediately? Food is quickly becoming a requisite.
I've been thinking the same thing. Anybody object?
Phew, fuck no.
I'm a little peckish myself.
Ditto.
Could eat a bear.
Fair enough. Let's leave.
Returning to the elevators, the companions rode down to the middle level and proceeded directly to the control room. Liana was astounded at the humming banks of machines completely spanning the wall, the monitors scrolling incomprehensible data, and the controls twinkling with multicolored lights, as if the night sky had been imprisoned behind plastic. Ryan walked through the antechamber at the end of the control room and proceeded to a door set into an armaglass wall.
And that is the Transmat unit?
Mat-trans. A matter transmitter.
And this will really take us to another... somewhere else on the planet?
In less than a heartbeat. Although the experience is... not very pleasant.
Most of the time we get there puking out of guts. But, you can't lose what you don't got.
Fair enough. Okay, let's blow this popsicle stand.
Get your ass in the box, Singer.
Startled for only a moment... Liana grinned widely in response, feeling accepted by the others at last. The companions entered the unit, and Ryan turned to close the door to initiate a jump. Suddenly, the oval door to the control room swung open, and in stepped Baron Griffin, flanked by three armed sec men.
There they be, Baron! Surrender, murderer!
Doc, look out!
Liana stepped in front of Doc, her gun leveled. She fell to the chamber floor, riddled with bullets, as Ryan pushed the door closed to cycle a jump. The floor dropped away beneath the companions, and they plummeted into the swirling void of controlled subatomic chaos. Searing pain filled their twisting universe, and bizarre visions of the past filled their beleaguered minds. Then the mists thankfully vanished, as quickly as they had appeared. The companions fought to keep from retching, their stomachs heaving in wild rebellion. Ryan stood and opened the door, and took in the sight of the now empty antechamber. The walls here were a deep blue in color, with maroon highlights. Then, icy cold adrenaline flooded him, banning the usual sickness, as he saw Liana in Doc's arms, dead on the floor of the Matrans chamber.
Liana.
What now?
We go back. We must stop the madman.
Can't. We'll be too weak when we arrive. We get chilled.
Got one last pipe bomb. It won't arrive puking.
The companions reverently moved Liana's riddled remains into the anteroom.
How long do we give them?
The last destination button is only good for 30 minutes. We'll wait as long as we can before going back.
Doc, I am so sorry.
But Doc just turned away, his face a study in anger. When their crons registered 25 minutes, the companions grimly got back into the chamber and sat with their guns in their hands. A double jump was always bad, and already weak with hunger, they knew this might very well end in disaster. Waiting until the very last moment, Ryan hit the LD button, and once more the mists descended. And what seemed like only a heartbeat later, the sparkling mists faded. The companions feebly managed to stand, and Ryan slightly opened the chamber door. Incredibly, three of the Baron's men and the canny had remained in the control room to ransack drawers and collect bits of metal. When the gateway cycled down, they stood transfixed, not knowing what to expect. Without a word, JB tossed the pipe bomb into their midst. The startled men had no time to react and were cut to pieces by the bomb's shrapnel. The companions entered the control room and found the remains.
Damn it! The Baron's not here! He escaped!
Running into the corridor, Doc paused as Ryan and Christy joined him.
Listen! He's going up the stairs!
Doc went straight for the elevator, with Ryan and Christy close behind. Banging on the call button never seemed to bring the car any faster. But Doc did it anyway. First Emily, then Lori, and now Liana. What did the universe want? His very soul to break? Would that be enough payment for his crime of being the first time traveler to ever survive the hideous experiments? Demons tugged at Doc's mind, but the car door's opening brought him back to sanity, and he stumbled inside only a split second before Ryan and Christy.
Do not get in my way.
Whatever you say.
When the doors opened again, Doc dashed across the garage and reached the door to the stairwell just as it opened, and Baron Griffin came into view. Doc raised the Lamar and took off the Baron's gun hand. Griffin staggered backward and tumbled down the stairs to crash in a heap on the next landing. Standing above the Baron, Doc aimed again, this time blowing off a boot, the tattered end of a leg gushing a torrent of blood. Griffin pitifully raised his good hand, before Doc removed that as well.
Enough! I said that's enough! No, my friend, it's not. But it will do for now.
Christy helped Doc into the jump chamber. For one of the few times since they had met, Tanner actually appeared to be old. His eyes were full of sadness, but no tears had come yet. Anger was keeping him going, nothing else. Soon he would mourn, but not here, and not yet.
Catch the Baron?
Yes.
There were five horses outside. How many got chilled here?
Four.
What now?
Now? Now, my young friend, we get the fuck out of Michigan.
Exchanging startled glances, the rest of the companions joined Doc on the floor, waiting as Ryan shut the gateway door, then hurried to join Christy. The electronic mist swirled and enveloped them once more. Deathlands, Time Castaways is a graphic audio production. Deathlands and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 1998, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Elizabeth Jernigan, Barbara Pinellini, Kimberly Gilbert, Thomas Penny, Stephen Carpenter, Eric Messner, Karen Novak, MJ Casey, Dan Stevens, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Ted Stoddard, Ken Jackson, Dylan Lynch, Mort Shelby, Nathaniel Perry, Greg Reinfeld, and Johan Detweiler. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rick Rowan and Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Dan Sondak, Nathaniel Perry, and Johan Detweiler. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders and Earthblood, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Here at Oracle, I have learned the darkness of Tuellafar hearts and the cruelty of Tuellafar generosity, for they do nothing for the good of a human. They use that guise merely to gain full control, that they might manipulate their rangers to serve only the Tuellafar. But here at Oracle, I learned to turn their duplicitous games back upon them. How delicious will the irony be when I crush them?
He possesses me. Adrian, our king. I am not strong enough to begin to deny him. There is no resistance within me. He is strong, Roger. So terribly strong.
They're all dead now, you know. Avalyn, Jojona. Oh, yes. I had the distinct pleasure of heaping the logs onto the pyre that burned that heretic. And Elbrian, by my own hand. Oh, and Brahmin Herd, you know. By my own hand.
You lie.
The river has taken him out into the gulf by now, of course. The fish have no doubt nibbled the flesh from his bones.
You lie!
Too long have I waited for this moment, Dasselrond. It was your grave error in training me. You made me too strong.
My greatest error was in not allowing you to die on the field outside of Palmares. For I erred in my estimation of your parentage. I thought Elbrian to be your father, but in truth it was Bestus Belzebar.
Because I reject you and your wretched kin. Because I have become too great to be controlled by the Tuellafar. You fear me and taunt me because you know that you cannot defeat me.
I already have.
Choice. A curious word. And our two kingdoms stand on a steep precipice. One whose outcome will be decided by the choices of their leaders. A precipice as sharp as the plateau divide that separates Beren and Togai. And do note, Dragon of Togai, upon which side of that dividing line Darian resides. Choose wisely.
I already have.
Meet my dragon, Yator de Haman.
The girl thinks of everything. But I've trained that one well, I have.
Don't miss part 2 of the final tale in the Demon War Saga, Book 7, Immortalis. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.